Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moscowain. Food co-ops have made a comeback in recent years as people pursue quality, nutritious, and locally sourced foods. The recent unstable economy has driven some families to be more selective about what they eat, and some share a collective interest in sustaining their own control over their neighborhood businesses. Local co-ops here in this region have been enjoying expansions. For example, Weaver's Way Co-op, which was founded in 1973, is expanding from their Chestnut Hill and Mount Airy stores to Elkins Park this fall, with other sites in development. The co-op is hosting the annual Consumer Cooperative Management Association National Conference in Philadelphia this weekend. And West Philadelphia's 40-year-old Mariposa Food Co-op is expanding into a new store. So we'll talk about food co-ops, their roles, who shops there, what you can buy, why you might want to be a member. Our guests are David Wu. He is the immediate past president of the Weaver's Way Board. David, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you, Mike, and it's a pleasure to be here.
And we also have in the studio Bill Gessner. He's the lead consultant for CDS Consulting Co-op, which specializes in national co-op expansion planning and business development. Thank you, Bill, for joining us.
Thank you, Mike, and it's great to be here.
And later on in a little while, we'll check in with public health professor Marion Nestle, who's written a lot about the topic of food and politics and food and nutrition, and she'll join us to talk a little bit about food co-ops as well. Bill Gessner, let me start with you. When did food co-ops become popular, and why?
Well, I think they there have been several waves of food co-ops going back to the 1930s even. In the 1960s and early 70s, there were quite a number of food co-ops that came forth because there weren't natural and organic foods available elsewhere. And so there was quite a proliferation of those co-ops, and a number of them survived that adopted good business practices. And there are about 300 food co-ops that have kind of come out of that era, and most of them, there were a lot more, but there are about 300 left from that era. And now about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, there's been a new wave of food co-ops coming.
How many would you say are in the country? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, at this point, there have probably been close to 70 co-ops that have opened in the last 8 years, which is really quite an accomplishment. And we have, in our consulting group, we've had contacts from over 300 different communities around the country that really desire to have a food co-op and are working to form that. So that's a very active process going on nationally.
And I want to invite our listeners to call in with questions about food co-ops, whether maybe you're a member, have an experience you want to share, maybe you want to start one. 1-888-477-9499 is that number to join the conversation. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. David Wu, you are with Weaver's Way. Describe, what are the basic elements of a food co-op?
Well, I think it starts with values, which are pretty consistent throughout the entire sector. But before I continue, I do need a minor correction. Weaver's Way is not opening up the Elkins Park store. That is an independent group that is separate from Weaver's Way with its own board. They are their own entity. We are cooperating amongst cooperatives. And Weaver's Way has provided them with a lot of information, expertise, consultations, and support along the way. So it may appear that we are so linked that that is going to be a Weaver's Way branded store. It is not. They are known as the Creekside Cooperative in Elkins Park. So I'm sorry somehow the information about that got a little mixed up along the way. It gives me an opportunity to talk about their name. And we started with them many years ago, and they're going to be expected to be opening sometime in the fall of this year.
So you're kind of the big brother co-op.
At the moment, we are in Philadelphia.
And you're helping others along the way.
Yes, we are really doing quite a bit of work with that.
Okay. So, David, describe to us what makes a store a co-op? You started talking about the shared values.
Sure.
So what are the values?
Well, there are currently 7 cooperative principles from the International Cooperative Alliance, and they're simply voluntary and open membership, democratic member control, members' economic participation, autonomy and independence, education, training, and information, cooperation amongst cooperatives, and then concern for communities. And those are essentially almost the same principles that a group of pioneers in Rochdale, England, a little suburb of Manchester, in 1844 wanted to get out from under the thumb of the man and adulterated food, plaster and flour, thumb on a scale. And they said, we're just going to open our own store. And they saved their pences.
But, Bill, none of these values tell me anything about the food I'm going to buy at your store. So what do we say about the food and the products that are going to be available at a co-op? Are there certain guiding principles?
Well, it's up to every co-op and the members of every co-op to basically shape their co-op and their store. And for the most part, most of the food co-ops today feature natural and organic foods and with an increasing amount of emphasis on locally produced foods.
Mm-hmm. So, and now talk about the member participation.
Yeah.
So what are the general thoughts on that?
Yes. Well, the membership, being a member of a food co-op, is an extremely important part of the whole concept. And it's cooperation is really a very simple concept, and the members own the co-op. The members elect a board of directors, and the board of directors typically hires management. But members own the co-op, and they have a vote in electing a board of directors. And typically, it requires an equity investment, maybe $100 to $300, to become a member owner of a food co-op. And not all of in most of the food co-ops in the country, anyone can shop at the co-op. Some co-ops are for members only, but a very small percentage, maybe 2 or 3% of the food co-ops are that way. So, and maybe of the sales at a food co-op, maybe 50 to 70% of them come from the members, and the rest are from non-members.
So if everybody can shop there, why would I want to be a member? And I work in public radio, so I know why. But tell me why, David Wu.
Well, that's because these members get to decide what happens. There's stability in this. They want something. They've got to say. They've got a complaint. It may be something that they may not have brought up to someone, or maybe they didn't go to a meeting. Everybody has a stake in running that operation. The larger the co-op, it's a little more difficult, but you've got a willingness and a want to see this business succeed. And at Weaver's Way, I'm not a boss there. I'm merely at the time I was the president of the board of directors, I'm not in charge of anything that it's run. All the members out there, I look at them as my bosses. They're the people who tell me what to do, and the board of directors' job is to find out what the will of those members is, and to find it and to figure out how to execute that will and to make things happen the way the members want it to happen.
We're talking about food co-ops. That was David Wu, who was the immediate past president of the Weaver's Way Board, which is a food co-op in Mount Airy, Chestnut Hill. And we also have with us Bill Gessner, who is a national expert on food co-ops, and he is a lead consultant for CDS Consulting, and they help other co-ops expand and grow. Give us a call if you want to weigh in with a question about co-ops, if you have one in your neighborhood, are a member, maybe you want to start one. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499, 1-888-477-9499. Co-ops are obviously different from grocery stores in many ways. The most glaring thing maybe is the profit. Does a co-op make a profit, or where does the money go?
Mm-hmm.
Bill?
The co-op certainly should be making a profit. They need to make a profit to continue to stay in business. But one of the co-op principles is that profits are basically returned to members based on their patronage, based on how much they use the co-op. And so the profits at the end of the year in many cases are returned in the form of a patronage rebate. The co-op will, some of that is returned in the form of direct cash, and some of it goes into the member's equity account and stays in the co-op for capital improvements.
Why does it have to make a profit then? Why couldn't it just, you know, balance the
Well, as a business, the co-op is a business, and what I'm most fascinated about food co-ops is this combination of the cooperative and the business. And in order, it it needs to be strong as a business, and businesses need to be profitable to sustain themselves and to reinvest in the business and to help it to grow. And but it also needs to be strong as a cooperative and strong as a member-owned and member-driven organization. And bringing those two things together is the real fascinating dynamic that I think is such a simple and beautiful concept, and it can apply to so much of our economy. And I think a lot of what we're seeing today is kind of a new interest in this model, and it could be applied to other areas, certainly besides food. Mm-hmm. And there are co-ops of all kinds in the world today, and there are over 2 billion members of cooperatives worldwide.
And David, I would imagine that a co-op has a much smaller profit, though, than
it really depends on the individual cooperative. Mm-hmm. I mean, Weaver's Way, we need to make a profit because machinery, gets old and gets worn out and needs to be replaced. We have 130 staff members. They need to be paid, and we need to be able to keep up with insurance benefits, which all businesses are being faced with. And if we are cutting it to the bone where we're not making a profit, mm-hmm. we're not having that cushion. We're not having that additional money that enables us to do the things that we do that the members want.
But you don't have the pressure that
yes.
a grocery store like a ShopRite or something else has.
The pressure may be a little different in that it's not from some shareholder or an absentee owner mm-hmm. in another part of the country that's pushing the manager, we need to make more money on tomatoes this week. That pressure is going to be the services that we provide that our members mandate that we provide to them. But the whole part of this is that they're not out of the loop. They're part of that important loop. They're the ones who are the reason for the existence of that particular cooperative.
And what kind of employees do you attract? I would assume somebody managing a Weaver's Way has to have experience running a grocery store.
Yes.
That's a very specialized experience.
Yes.
Why do they come to the co-op store rather than working at Trader Joe's?
Because they like the community, because uh-huh. their friends are part of the cooperative. Our current general manager was a member for many, many years. And like any member, he kind of like goes along with everybody. And then one day we needed a new general manager, and he was in a position to take over. And when he became the general manager, he learned quite a bit about the cooperative business model and how much more different it is than corporate America. But the results are, it looks like a grocery store, it smells like a grocery store, and it operates like a grocery store. So there are some very interesting aspects, and part of it is the ownership difference. Mm-hmm. That member participation makes a difference that's much more stable.
Yeah, so, and I would also imagine that the communication loop is smaller, because you're one local place and not a huge chain.
Well, at the moment we are, but Recreational Equipment Incorporated, REI, they're a nationally known consumer cooperative, and their communication chain is just like any big business.
We have a break coming up, and then Bill Gessner, I'll give you a chance to weigh in on this. We're talking about food co-ops with David Wu of Weaver's Way and also Bill Gessner, who comes to Philadelphia for a conference this weekend. He is from CDS Consulting Co-op. We'll talk more about food co-ops in just a moment. Our number here is 1-888-477-9499. Give us a call.
Abington Memorial Hospital proudly supports WHYY and offers new technology that can permanently repair a condition commonly known as a hole in the heart. Interventional cardiologists are using a self-expandable double umbrella made from wire mesh and polyester fabric to close the defect without surgery. When the implant is in place, the device becomes a permanent part of the wall of the heart. To learn more about the procedure, amh.org/heart. That's amh.org/heart.
Hey, I'm Jed.
I'm Robert.
We make the show Radiolab,
which is mostly a show just for your ears.
But not anymore. Because coming soon to the Kimmel Center's Academy of Music...
A very different kind of Radiolab.
Yeah, eyeballs dancing.
Astronauts sizzling.
Holy cow.
Blind men yelling.
Sultan, you are trying to impose a visual totalitarianism upon the human brain.
Join us for Radiolab Live June 29th. Details are at radiolab.org/inthedark.
America's Catholic bishops are in Atlanta for their annual meeting, and they have some heavy lifting to do. They're assessing whether reforms aimed at protecting kids from sexual abuse are doing the job, and they're facing questions about whether their opposition to the new health care law has crossed the line from principle to partisan. We'll hear more next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moscowane, and we're talking about food co-ops, how they work, what they are not, how they differ from grocery stores. Joining us in the studio is David Wu. He is immediate past president of the Weaver's Way Board, which is a food co-op, very popular one in Mount Airy, Chestnut Hill. And we also have with us Bill Gessner. He is the lead consultant for CDS Consulting Co-op, which specializes in helping co-ops expand and grow and plan their business. And Bill, as we were describing what co-ops are, you wanted to weigh in on that before we had to go to break. So go ahead.
Yeah, there was a little discussion about how a co-op looks like a grocery store and acts like a grocery store, and it certainly should. But the great thing is that it's more than a grocery store. And the cooperative kind of encircles the grocery store. The store is at the center and is kind of the hub, but a big circle around that represents all the members and the community.
And you do activities, education typically, correct?
Yes. And so it's a coming together of people in community to learn and grow together and build community. And
yeah.
I think there's a hunger for community. And these in food co-ops, the existing food co-ops are a great treasure to the communities that they exist in. And there are so many more communities that are now wanting a food co-op.
And joining us now on the phone is Marion Nessel. She is this weekend one of the keynote speakers at the annual Consumer Cooperative Management Association National Conference in Philadelphia, which Weaver's Way is hosting. And Marion Nessel is a professor in the Department of Nutrition and Food Studies at New York University. And her latest book is Why Calories Count. She has written extensively on the whole issue of the politics of food. Marion Nessel, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So we've been talking about what food co-ops are, how they operate, and it seems to me that they turn shopping into something of a almost political choice. You're making a statement when you shop at a co-op to some extent.
Well, I should disclose fully that I'm a member of a food co-op in Ithaca, New York,
mm-hmm.
the Green Star Cooperative, and I just love shopping there because there's something about it's my store. I feel some pride of ownership. I love what they do there. The food is wonderful. There's a richness about it that you don't get in many other grocery stores, and it makes you feel like a member of the community, which is a really nice way to feel. And they have great food. So it seems like a really good deal all the way around. And yes, it's a political statement because cooperatives are an alternative to the usual corporate retailing model. And the questions about what the store sells and how it sells it and what kind of values are embodied seems to me to be something that is a meaningful alternative to a lot of shopping experiences that aren't very pleasant.
Mm-hmm. What are consumers getting interested in your experience, in terms of their food? What are some issues we hear a lot about? For example, the humane treatment of animals. We hear a lot of what is in my food? What am I actually eating? What are the key issues, in your opinion, that consumers want to be informed about?
Well, I do a lot of public speaking throughout the country, and everywhere I go, I'm impressed by what I see as a national movement around food issues, centered on food issues, where people are eager to learn more about where food comes from, who is producing it, how it's being produced, whether it's what it's contaminated with, and what they can do to get rid of contaminants in the food supply that they would rather not have there. And certainly animal welfare is an important part of that. Environmental issues are critically important. And then the overriding one, of course, is health. Is my food healthy?
Mm-hmm.
And all of these issues, I think, are ways in which the public at large. I think of it as of the people, by the people, for the people. It's democracy in action, because it's individuals engaging with the society in very important ways.
And David Wu and Bill Gessner, who are joining us in studio, Marion, I want to also ask you, people seem to be more interested in the connection between supporting local agriculture and how it affects mm-hmm. their whole region where they live. Mm-hmm. Do you talk a lot about that in your co-op?
We do. And at the conference, there are many cooperatives out there beside Weaver's Way that are doing things such as conservation easements, farming easements, and deed restrictions on land. There's actually a land trust in Washington State that the PCC cooperative is doing. There are farms that are being bought by cooperatives in the Midwest and in urban areas in Philadelphia. Many people are aware of the Aubrey Arboretum, and where Weaver's Way got its start with our farm, that we're actually farming and producing food for farmers markets and our stores. So there is that hunger, there is that need, and people are drawn to cooperatives as maybe a cutting edge of what is out there in the hope that we know that our food is safe and healthy for us.
Bill, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yes. A lot of the new food co-ops that are trying to form and open a store around the country are being driven in part or in large part by the interest in local foods and locally produced foods. And some of them have a vision of opening a store that's stocked entirely by local foods. And I always tell them that, well, that's a pretty tall order. And if you can get even 20 or 25% of your foods locally produced as a first step, that's tremendous. But we have startup food co-op like in Chatham, New York, Chatham Real Foods Co-op, that is really devoted to building the local food network in their community, and they've been open now for 2 or 3 years, and they've been doing a great job with that.
And Marion Nestle, how much of a player is the co-op movement in this gigantic international global industry that is food? I mean, it seems like it's a flea, but it's jumping pretty high.
You know, it's tiny but growing.
Yeah.
The easiest way to measure it, I don't have measurements for food co-ops, but there are measurements for sales of organic foods and numbers of farmers markets. Those are counted by the Department of Agriculture. And the number of farmers markets throughout the country has increased dramatically over the last 10 years. It's doubled, tripled. The numbers keep going up. There have to be outlets for the sales of, that means there are local farmers who are producing food. They need outlets to sell their products. That the availability of those kinds of foods drives the creation of community supported agriculture and food co-ops. And we can see that sales of organic foods are booming. That's an indicator of a section of the public. It's still very small, less than two digits. Mm-hmm. It's 8-9%, maybe 10%, but it's growing. And it's the only section of the food supply that's growing. So each little percentage of market share makes an enormous difference, because people can only eat enough food. It's a fixed, you know, it's fixed. It can't, the amount of food that you eat can't grow forever. So the industrial food system is kind of stuck where it is. And these alternative kinds of food systems are making increasing inroads into it, and I think that's a really good thing.
How much of a political issue is food, generally speaking? Recently, we heard the issue of pink slime making some pretty big headlines. There's also been national political discussion about what's being given to children in schools. We hear a lot of talk about obesity. Is this entering the political discussion as much as other topics like gay marriage and so on is?
Oh, I think it's been a topic of political discussion for a very long time, because there's so much money involved. Food is more than $1 trillion a year business in the United States alone. And because the amount of food that people can eat is fixed, everybody is competing fiercely for market share. Everything is about market share and trying to get people to buy more products and eat more, not less. I attribute much of the rise in rates of obesity to food industry pressure to get people to eat more food just to keep their businesses going. I'm not anti-business, but I think we need to have some kind of restriction on the kinds of marketing that's being done. And if you want to see the politics in action, just look at the reaction to Mayor Bloomberg's rather mild proposal that soft drinks in city institutions be limited to 16 ounces.
Mm.
You know, nobody's stopping people from buying more or bigger, but to make 16 ounces the default seems rather generous to me. They showed advertisements that showed that back in the day, Coke advertised a 16-ounce cola as serving three people.
Wow.
Times have changed.
David Wu, how do politics enter the conversations at Reverse Way?
Well, very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the interest that's generated by the Farm Bill. That is
yeah, the Farm
an
Bill.
Incredible amount of complexity that's in there. Who can read through all of that and understand how it all shakes out?
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be more involved with those politics to have a better understanding of it. And food co-ops maybe are a bulwark against some of that excessive marketing for increased quantities. And we want increased nutrition and value and increased safety in our foods. And what happens, I think, with more of this interest is a food co-op opens up. It might not benefit everybody directly, but indirectly, some of the food retailers, I'm hoping, are taking a look at this, and maybe they'll move toward our end of the market and start approaching those. And I think they've already had. You look at some of the big players that are out there now, they've taken some of the information, they've taken the feel and,
mm-hmm.
and the genuineness, and they've applied it to their marketing efforts for a lot of their operations, and they're trying to imitate the food co-op's feeling of that community. But their primary goal is not that community's benefit, because money's being taken out. It's for their increased profit pressure.
Yeah. Bill, do you want to weigh in on that, Bill Gessner?
Well, I think from a political point of view, I think of it very broadly that food as a basic necessity is, I guess, political. And I think the great thing about cooperatives is one of the key co-op principles, which is voluntary and open membership. And I think the more that I really learn about that principle and kind of study it, the impact is, the potential for it is tremendous in terms of open membership, that I can become a member owner of a cooperative. I can step forward and have the opportunity to participate in some very basic aspects that affect my quality of life and my community. And that's a very empowering type of act. Mm-hmm. And I see that there's kind of a new economy that's emerging that is really based on cooperation and on sustainability and on democracy and community, and bringing all of those things together in a way that's really vital and inspiring.
Yes. And Marion Nestle, I want to talk to you before we get to our callers who are hanging in the wings at 1-888-477-9499. Marion Nestle, I wanted to ask you about the issue of price. A lot of our choices as consumers when it comes to food are motivated by how much we are able and willing to pay for food, and also how convenient it is. So I think a lot of us maybe want to do the right thing, but then there's price and convenience. Marion Nestle, how much does that play a role?
Well, this gets us right back into the politics of the Farm Bill. If you want to understand why the pricing structure is the way it is and why certain foods are cheaper than others, you study the Farm Bill. I taught a course at NYU in the Farm Bill in the fall semester, and I've been following what's been going on in the Senate with great interest, and I'll just say about it that the Senate version of the Farm Bill is 1,010 pages long.
No.
And 300 or more amendments have been put into play for it. No rational person can possibly understand it. It's profoundly undemocratic in every single way because it's so impossible to deal with. And I think it's some place where, yes, you flee the food co-ops to get away from it.
Yeah. And a lot of our foods are subsidized, correct? So do you think in general we're used to food prices that are artificially low in this country?
Well, we're used to junk food prices that are artificially low. Sodas and snack foods. That's where the farm subsidies have their biggest effect. Also meat, because the farm subsidies go to corn and soybeans, and most of the corn and soybeans in this country, grown in this country, go to feed animals. So it's a very complicated system. And the way I describe the Farm Bill is as a collection of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of unrelated programs, each with its own constituency and lobbyists fighting for a piece of the action.
A lot of lobbying going on around the food bill, correct?
There's a lot of money involved in it, nearly $100 billion a year, of which most goes to food stamps, which is another weirdness about it.
Huh. David Wu, how are the prices? Oh, sorry, do you want to weigh
in on
this
issue? I was just going to ask, it's like, well, is there a kale subsidy?
Kale subsidy?
Alas, no. although it would be nice to have one, wouldn't it?
Yes, I mean, there's not a subsidy for kale, which is, you know, highly packed with nutrition. And those are just some of the issues where we're...
Doesn't have a lot of lobbying power behind it.
Yeah, well, or broccoli, which is now the flashpoint.
Yeah, exactly. We need the kale lobby to stand up.
David, how are the prices at Weaver's
Way? Well, Weaver's Way, I have to bring scale in. Let's say, for example, we carry a box of Cheerios, just for an example.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to buy maybe a carton of it, and we'll have... We're not going to buy pallet loads. We're not going to buy truck loads. We're not going to be able to buy train loads of it. So it's going to be more expensive at our store.
Yeah.
But the kale, as I was talking about, was going to be a kale that we've purchased specifically for our store from a supplier or producer that we know very, very well. It's going to be as local as possible. We're not able to carry kale in the middle of the winter. That's grown here in Philadelphia. But we'll do the best that we can. And it'll be as good a quality as any organic kale or locally produced kale anywhere in a farmer's market that was picked 2 or 3 days ago, and it'll be much less expensive because that's where our focus is going to be on.
Mm-hmm.
But our members also want, you know, the occasional convenience of being able to have a box of Cheerios when they come and get their kale.
Yeah, so you carry certain items not because it makes sense, but because you just should have them in the store.
Correct, because our members want that. And our focus is to do what we can. But again, running it as a business, there's a lot of complexity in being able to pick and choose what to do. We are constantly looking at that, and it each depends on the strength of each individual market and each individual cooperative and how they respond to that.
And we're going to have to say goodbye to Marion Nestle in a moment. So, Marion, what is your keynote speech going to be about this weekend in Philadelphia?
Well, I'm going to be talking about the politics of food and trying to relate it to consumer cooperatives as an alternative strategy for dealing with some of those issues. I'll be talking just about exactly about the kinds of things I've been talking about here.
And if consumers want to know more about the Farm Bill, where is a good place to start to get a better sense?
Well, I've been keeping track of it on my blog, foodpolitics.com, and I am very careful to link on the blog to the major sources of information that I'm using so that users of the blog can look at the original sources and make their own decisions about what they think they mean.
Yeah. Mary Nestle, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. We will talk more about food co-ops coming up. Mary Nestle is with New York University, and her latest book is Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. And coming up, we'll talk more with David Wu of Weaver's Way and Bill Gessner with CDS Consulting. We'll talk more about food co-ops. We'll also take your phone calls. A lot of you have been waiting at 1-888-477-9499. We'll get right to that here on Radio Times on WHYY. Stay tuned.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY, an affiliate of the Penn Cancer Network. They offer access to complex treatment options, clinical trials, a multidisciplinary team approach to care, and helpful nurse navigators. ChesterCountyHospital.org.
I'm Mike and Scott. In-depth news is important to you. That's why you listen to WHYY. It's the end of our fiscal year, and members have provided the support necessary to keep WHYY on the air. As we move into the new fiscal year, we need to hear from you. We'll continue to supply access to news and information, and you'll do your part now with a gift of support. Together, we'll keep WHYY strong. It takes just a moment when you give online at WHYY.org. Thank you.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Sammy Wanjiru revolutionized the marathon, but his death is a cautionary tale about running and drinking. Also, what did Mitt Romney say about health care reform when he was governor? Well, newly discovered emails reveal a very different story than the one we're hearing today. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Focus Features, presenting the new film Moonrise Kingdom, directed by Wes Anderson, and starring Bruce Willis, Edward Norton, Bill Murray, Frances McDormand, and Tilda Swinton. Moonrise Kingdom, in select theaters now.
And welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain, and we're talking about food co-ops, stores, grocery stores that are essentially run and owned by their members. They look and feel like a grocery store, but are much more a community hub and many more things. So let's have some people join the conversation in addition to David Wu, who is with Weaver's Way Board, and Bill Gessner, who is with CDS Consulting Co-op. Let's get to the phone calls at 1-888-477-9499. We have Tina joining us from Chester. Hi, Tina. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm excited about this conversation on co-ops. I run the co-op down in Chester in Delaware County. I'm the general manager of the Chester's Co-op. And we have a very unique model in the sense that we are a member labor co-op. We require our members to actually work as well as give an investment into the co-op to make it work in the way that we actually can offer lower prices on high-quality food at affordable pricing because our members give us that labor. And I have not heard your guess. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, how much do your members have to work at the co-op? What's the requirement?
Our members work 2 hours and 45 minutes every 4 weeks, which is roughly about 36 hours a year.
Okay.
In exchange for that labor, we're able to have a markup on our food of about 21%. So if we buy something for a dollar, we sell it for $1.21. And so what that allows us to do is to have access to food, like organic items that might cost $12 for organic nuts at a traditional market or even at another type of co-op. Maybe it costs $8 for us.
And what do your members,
what
do your members do at the store? What kind of work do they do?
They do everything. So they are responsible for cashiering. We have members who take care of our bookkeeping. Our members come with their skill set that helps to help our co-op run on day-to-day in a sense. And there are things that people learn. Maybe they want to learn how to do upkeep the website. And so we'll pair them with a member who's doing that, and they can learn that skill set at the same time. So our members really are in charge of the bulk of what keeps the co-op going. And because of that, we believe that the discount on the pricing on the food has to reward that for them.
Tina,
without their labor, it wouldn't happen.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective and how your model works, Tina. And David Wu, how about Weaver's Way?
Well, we used to be that way.
Uh-huh.
And we're now a hybrid where we no longer require member labor. We're now a member work optional cooperative with additional benefits. But getting back to Tina's question, that's an issue that a lot of startups should deal with and discuss and bring up features and benefits and pluses and minuses before they actually get implemented, because each community and each market is different.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some communities that can support that and some communities that may support that and some communities that can't. And those startup groups have to do that work. They have to discuss that, and they have to come to their own decisions. And Weaver's Way has changed, and we've modified over the years. There's not saying that we won't go back to member required, but I don't know. That's going to depend upon our members and our leadership.
Bill, what happens if members don't fill their requirements typically?
Well, there can be certainly issues with that, and coordinating volunteer workers is certainly can be a challenge, but it's great to hear of the progress that Tina talks about with the co-op in Chester. And but the most of the food co-ops around the country, 95% of them don't have a labor requirement of their members, and even a smaller, less than half of them even have a work optional system. And so just to kind of understand that. So there is a variety and a mix, and we certainly see some very successful options of the where work is required of the members, mm-hmm. like Park Slope right. in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And so I'm in favor of, you know, anything that works.
Yeah.
And actually just both Joe Holtz, the manager at Park Slope, and Tina, they're actually doing a workshop on this at our conference.
Okay. So let's get another call. We have Alan joining us from Ben Salem. Hi, Alan. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I'm aware of the importance of organics, and I want to include more of that into my life. And I get some of that from some of the food stores, but I'm located in Ben Salem, and it's kind of out of the close hub to places like Weaver's Way. I'm out in Ben Salem, so I was just wondering, you know, what can I do without having to drive an hour to get to a place yeah. like Weaver's Way to involve myself more in, you know, organics and local support,
okay.
local farmers.
All right, let me put your question to our guys here.
Well, right now there's an effort in Doylestown, which is still quite a ways from Ben Salem, and there is some people in Newtown that are interested in starting a committee. There are folks in Doylestown who are actively on a steering committee organizing. They've been doing this for quite some time. They originally started as a food buying club, which is another form of cooperative and collective work to get food
mm-hmm.
to you. The thing is to start an organizing committee and work and do the learning that's going to be required to figure out how to make this happen.
And the buying club, David, is kind of when you get a farmer to do business with you, if you get enough people saying, okay,
yeah,
we'll buy this.
It doesn't have
much.
To be a farmer. It could be yeah. any other vendor. It's
mm-hmm.
just a group of people gathering together to buy items in bulk without having a store, but it requires work and community commitment and compromise in that community, because, you know, there might be somebody who wants cashews and someone who wants peanuts, and the group has so much money and so much time to debate peanuts or cashews.
Yeah.
And you have to work through that community issue of what you really want. You can't go at it alone. You need a group of people, which is what a cooperative is, a group of people who come together to work on making things like this happen.
And David, obviously, as a food co-op, you have specific guidelines as to what you want to buy. But are there vendors who will not do business with Weaver's Way because it's a co-op? Or you know, are there certain
things? I think
things?
Maybe the model for that would rather be, are there businesses that food co-ops would rather not do business with?
Yes, of
with?
Course. I'm imagining there are many. But are there also certain places that won't sell
that
to
won't
you
sell
because
to
you don't buy enough? Such issues. You know?
Well, if it's not political, if it's like we can't have enough, we've currently have enough mass to be able to purchase pretty much in the quantity that we need for
okay.
most goods. And there are some vendors out there for some of these specialized, you know, goods like high quality organics or some supplements, whatever, that will be able to tailor as much as they can. But you have to have enough people to be able to make it worth it for the individual, and that's the whole thing about collectives and cooperatives, is coming together and massing that little bit that you have and adding it to something else that someone else has.
And Bill Gessner, you help cooperatives grow,
mm-hmm.
so I would think growing responsibly is an issue, because one of the beauties of this is that it's small, it's manageable. That's
right.
why it works, right? So how do you grow a cooperative
well,
and expand?
There are two ways to look at it. There are the startup co-ops that are trying to form and try to a group of people in a community coming together to organize and create a shared vision and to begin to test that vision and see if it's feasible and realistic, and then to be able to search out, for example, if they want to open a store, to go through that process. And a lot of people are kind of jumping into that and saying, yes, we want that for our community, and they don't often realize the amount of work and the amount of time it takes to do this. And so I say that, you know, on a fast track, it might take you 3 years to form a food co-op in your community. And you really need dedicated leadership, and you need a group of 20 people or so that are going to be actively engaged and working together effectively to do that. The existing food co-ops that have been around and I have a certain strength and are increasingly working together in a network through the National Co-op Grocers Association so that they can compete effectively. And they're very much committed to growth and sustainable growth and reasonable growth in their communities. And so they're looking at Weaver's Way as a good example of that, that has had, you know, how many years ago was just the one store,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, now has the new store in Chestnut Hill that is doing very well. And those two stores are very different from one another, mm-hmm. in some ways, mm-hmm. but they're all part of one co-op.
Yeah.
So of our strongest or largest, let's say our largest 100-150 co-ops in the country, can they add additional stores in neighboring communities where people aren't able to get organic foods and mm-hmm. local foods?
Yeah.
Or strengthen other startup groups with advice and consultation and resources. And the important thing is resources. Our website's got resources, and we can talk about some resources for folks in Ben Salem who might be willing to start a committee.
Let's get another call in. We have Karen waiting. She's in Newtown. Hi, Newtown Square. Hi, Karen. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Actually, I was going to address the issue, too. I moved here from the Midwest and was part of a buying club and found it difficult in the Philadelphia area to become part of a buying club because they weren't allowing startups on buying clubs. If you could buy from, like, UNFI, from, like, Whole Foods or Kimberton, Whole Foods. And so actually I ended up finding a buying club that was an hour away. And I'm just wondering if you have any comment on that, or if, because it seems to me that the food co-ops really do start with buying clubs. And it seems to me that there's a little bit of a stopgap in that, starting the buying club.
Karen, when you said they wouldn't let us start the buying club, who?
Well, because I was buying primarily from UNFI.
Which what is that? I'm sorry.
That is a United, I can't remember the acronym, but it's basically where you would buy in bulk.
Okay. So you were buying in bulk from a purveyor.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Bill, do you want to weigh in on this issue?
Well, some of the, like United Natural Foods probably has a minimum order size and, you know, some requirements that buying clubs would have to meet if they're able to purchase from them. But a lot of the startup food co-ops, some of them are growing out of buying clubs, but others are not. They have found that if they put their effort into creating a buying club, that takes away too much of their energy to form the food co-op that is ultimately aiming to have a retail store. So it can go both ways, but it's not always growing out of buying clubs.
David?
And part of it is just the community and the leadership willing to step forward and to gather the energy and the expertise and the advice and the resources to make this happen, because you just can't start one of these things overnight. And there's an expectation of a savvy businessman coming and joining this community of people wanting to start this and going, oh, let's do this. But do you know how to govern with possibly 500 to 1,000 people voting for your board of directors and making sure that everybody gets to do what they want? You don't know all the little steps, and in order to do this, these committees are learning all those little steps and figuring them all out and then implementing that, and that takes time to do.
Mm-hmm. David, you have specific guidelines that govern what you will and will not feature in your store, obviously. So do you continuously monitor products?
Well, for us, we've got full-time staff members and purchasers who are there, and they do the best that they can with the information that's coming in, but it is complex with the ingredient lists on the rosters are there. We have a product philosophy that's on our website that takes, you know, relatively closely of what we want in our stores, and that's what our consumers and our members count on. They want us to do the work, and we're going to do what we can to meet that, but we're not a pure, all-vegan grocery store that will only carry vegan product. We are a store that has a much larger base, and because of that, there are some things that we have to carry to be able to satisfy as broad a possible audience as we can. And our purchasing folks are doing a very good job with our a couple of committees of actual members who look in and analyze and decide what we ought to be carrying.
And are there fights over this kind of stuff where people say, you shouldn't have this?
I can say that occasionally there probably are. I'm not on that committee.
Okay. Is that a big issue, Bill, to continue to have that quality control in place at all times?
Well, it is important, but it's really important that it be meeting the members' needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
looking at that primarily, and some co-ops will just kind of some co-ops might have a very formalized food policy, but more often than not, it's left to management to operate a store and to meet the members' needs and meet the customers' needs, and that kind of sorts itself out that way.
And where do you see this model going, this movement?
I'd like to see it where Philadelphia will have a few more consumer cooperatives, and maybe Weary's Way, and within a decade will grow a little bit more than we are now to be able to service more people and to be able to provide that information and education out there with these seven cooperative principles to kind of increase the level of education out there and increase the health of our population, and not just for just the members of food cooperatives, but for everybody in the region.
And Bill, do you see the generally the co-op model picking up interest for other businesses?
For other businesses, yeah, I think there are some innovative things happening around the country in energy alternatives, in green design, things like that. Housing, certainly credit unions. Their co-ops extend in all arenas, certainly.
I mean, all business. I mean, food cooperatives are just a sector of the cooperative business model that's out there. As Bill was saying, there are other business models that are out there that are organized as cooperatives, and they're not just all consumer cooperatives, but there are service and producer cooperatives out there that are much, much larger than food cooperatives. So we're a small sector of that.
And David, it seems that this region is very active in the co-op movement and is kind of a leader of sorts.
Oh, I think we are. I think we've done our best to envision and to put that out to the public. A lot of us have been inspired by some of the writings and the speeches of Gaurav Paravitz, who came and spoke at our co-op in 2006.
All right. And with that, we're going to have to close. Good luck with your conference this weekend.
Thank you.
Is David Wu. He is immediate past president of the Weaver's Way Board of Food Co-op in Mount Airy and Chestnut Hill. We've also been joined by Bill Gessner, lead consultant for CDS Consulting Co-op, which specializes in national co-op expansion planning and business development. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times. Radio Times is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. Our engineers today have been Kevin Griffin and Al Banks. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. Thank you so much for joining us for Radio Times here on WHYY.